Brady Bowman with U.S. Congressman Roger Marshall of the aptly named Kansas 1st District, the Big 1st. Congressman, first off, appreciate you joining us.
You bet, Brady. I'm glad to be on and always glad to communicate to my people back home.
And we thank you for that. I think that's one thing, even this heated political climate, one thing that we're always thankful for is just having this line of communication. So we, again, really appreciate that. I guess first off, we'll just start with a press release from your office this morning talking about President Trump's budget and tax plan. You mentioned some things you disagree with there and just your thoughts on that budget.
Well, I think, first of all, I want to talk about what we agree upon. I'm excited that President Trump is trying to figure out a way to balance a budget over a 10-year time span to stop borrowing money from our grandchildren. I think it's a great idea. We're excited that he's still prioritizing national security, but certainly it did not help agriculture a lot. Specifically, we're very concerned about some of the cuts he's suggesting for crop insurance and farm programs. So we've got some work to do here, it looks like.
From what I've seen, really, from both sides of the aisle, a lot of people are saying that this is a budget that's kind of dead on arrival and that would need a lot of work with it. Do you agree with that?
I think, from what I've been told up here, every president's budget is dead on arrival. So that's nothing new. I'm just kind of shocked. But it's really a very trim budget, very lean. But it's good for us to get a look. What would it take for this country to get back on a budget? And this is what it looks like. So unless we reshuffle some things or grow this economy, this is what our future looks like.
Some economists have said that this budget idea, and granted, this is, as you know, very early stages of this budget, but they're worried about the potential of it to add to the deficit by the end of the 10 years. Your thoughts there?
Well, I think it's always possible. It's very, very hard to predict which way some of these are going to go. And I think unless our economy grows, it's very likely it could add to our deficit. So part of the plan, besides developing a budget here, is moving on to policy that's going to help grow this economy. Things like working on a new tax reform policy, some infrastructure concepts as well.
Going back to what it does on the agricultural side of things, as far as farm bill programs, it looks like a $38 billion cut in this budget. And a lot of it has to do with a cap on crop insurance premiums and subsidies there. Could you, I guess for people who maybe aren't aware too much of just how that works and how crop insurance works, you kind of explain a little bit of that?
Well, you know, crop insurance, this is a great example. This year is a great example of why we need crop insurance is... my goodness, Kansas has been through prairie fires and drought and then snow, and so it's going to be, and now, of course, now it's some hail and tornado as well. So you're either going to have a great wheat crop or no wheat crop this year, it looks like. So the crop insurance is both kind of like flood insurance. The federal government pays about 60% of the premium. It comes out to about $28 per American is what crop insurance costs. And that, to me, helps provide a reliable, affordable food source for generations to come. So that's, you know, basically how it works. And what the president's budget suggested, like a 36% reduction, and he was going to do that through limiting premium subsidies to a maximum of $40,000 per entity, and any entity that made more than $500,000 adjusted gross income would not be eligible as well. And we have some concerns about that these people that have the larger adjusted gross income actually help balance out and make the rest of the insurance pool more balanced. So we're very concerned about making those eligibilities like that, much like health insurance tried to do the same thing under Obamacare and the healthy people pulled out of it.
What's kind of the attitude as far as agriculture, as far as that voice of agriculture in the White House right now? Because you're not the first one to criticize this budget when it comes to things related to agriculture. And I know that Senator Moran was very critical and the Kansas Farm Bureau was very critical earlier in the year when the TPP was pulled out of. Where do you think the voice of agriculture is right now when it comes to the executive branch?
Right. Brady, first of all, I think everybody, all the different departments, not just agriculture, took about a 15 to 20% hit, with the exception of military and border security. So I don't think he's necessarily picking on agriculture. What I'm very optimistic about is our Secretary of Agriculture, and that's the voice in the White House, Governor Perdue, now Secretary Perdue. And we did get to meet with him last week, and it was a great meeting. Very optimistic, and everyone needs to realize that when President Trump was threatening to bow out of NAFTA, Secretary Perdue was able to run over to the White House and show the president a map of the states that elected him president. And, of course, that would be the flyover states, us agriculture states. And when the president realized that and the impact of NAFTA, you saw the president pivot pretty quickly and say, well, wait a second, maybe I am overreacting with this. So I do think we have a strong voice there in Secretary Perdue. Certainly, I'm much more optimistic today than I was 2 months ago. So we'll be okay.
Going back to the Trans-Pacific Partnership just real quick, I know one thing that when that was announced that the U.S. would bow out of that agreement, there was a lot of talk of a different idea, some alternative to kind of try and do some of the same things but in a different way. Do you know where we're at on some of that? I know a lot of people were looking forward to the possible open markets that the TPP would have opened up for us.
Exactly. So to that end, I'm sure you know that it looks like China's going to open itself back up to our beef. So that's been over 10 years since we've had beef to China. That's very likely going to happen, and President Trump opened that door, and we have no one else to thank but for him. So we need our U.S. Trade Representative, Bob Lighthizer, to follow up and make that deal happen. We're meeting with Bob tomorrow. You know that the President and Vice President of both have already spoken to Japan. Currently, Japan has a 38% tariff on American beef and an 18% tariff on Australian beef. So the Vice President and now the Secretary of Agriculture and the U.S. Trade Rep will hop in there and start negotiating that as well. And I'm excited that last week alone in our office, we met with representatives from Taiwan, from Japan, as well as Mexico grain purchasers, trying to make those trade relationships stronger. And you know, I think I've shared before, we've been to Cuba and back and are continuing to work on some legislation to open those markets up. So I do think there are some TPP principles that we can use on these bilateral agreements, and just can't wait for Bob Lighthizer, our meeting with him, I believe it's tomorrow.
All right, and just clarification, the wheels first started moving on the China beef situation with actually right at the end of the Obama administration in September 2016. So good to see that it has been continued, at least, for sure. Going back to the budget real quick, the Trump budget, one thing that's really been highlighted a lot since that came out, I guess a couple of days ago is when that first kind of came out, was Medicaid and children's health insurance programs looking at a $616 billion cut. Obviously, health care is one of the top topics right now in our country, and your thoughts there, that's a big chunk of change.
Certainly, we're going to keep prioritizing Medicaid for those who need it the most, and that would be people with disabilities, infants, children, and the elderly. So I think that Congress and the House side especially, both sides of the Congress, are very committed to making sure that those people get adequate funding. So we'll fight tooth and nail to make sure that we keep proper funding for those people who need it the most.
And I know, Congressman, you've never been shy to talk about your Christian faith. When you look at this budget, and I don't know how deep you've had a chance to look at it yet, but how does this budget align with those views, especially when it comes to cuts that affect the sick and the poor?
Cut the what?
Especially when it comes to cuts that are in this budget when it comes to sick and the poor for those programs.
You know, it's interesting. I think that God calls us also to be to live within our means as well. So I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan, and certainly I was taught Christian values by my parents to pay cash for a car and not borrow money, and those types of principles. I think that, you know, our constant battle here is to prioritize things. So to me, the emphasis will always be on growing the economy and giving people a hand up rather than a handout. So I think if we make the economy stronger, there's going to be less people that need welfare. So I think I'm always going to keep focusing on how can we grow the economy, focus on education. I think that education is the single path that's consistently worked to get people out of poverty. So I think there has to be a balance, but we're not going to turn our shoulders to the needy and those who need the help, though.
All right, and sticking with this budget, when it comes to the philosophy of this budget, a lot of people have compared it to Governor Brownback's philosophy as far as the way that state budget here is kind of formulated and kind of where the priorities are there. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
You know, really not. I think it's an apples and oranges comparison. I think that tax policy that works at the state level may not necessarily work at the federal level and vice versa. You know, we're not singling out one particular entity like an LLC and pass-throughs and eliminating taxes for those. I think that a tax policy that decreases corporate taxes and grows job at the federal level will actually work, and we're not going to give LLCs or S-Corps a big advantage. So I think it's apples and oranges.
And just to switch gears here a little bit, now that you've been in office, what, about almost 6 months, right? Is that right?
Oh, since January, so
yeah,
quite
yeah.
6 months, so 5 months.
Well, you know, just kind of real quick with that, now that you're about 5-6 months in, you know, what are you learning being a freshman congressman, and just how's the experience been for you?
I think I've learned that, like almost all aspects of the real world, is that personal relationships are very, very important. And the more these relationships grow, I think the better chance we have of solving problems. You know, I was just sat down with a fellow freshman Democrat on the Ag Committee, talking about nutrition needs across the world. So working together with people is the same principle here as it was on a church board or working with United Way or the Chamber Board. So it's all about the people. People are the ones that solve problems. People are the ones that's going to write these trade agreements. So we're investing in our relationship with other people.
You won in a primary, and it was definitely a statement against your predecessor, Tim Huell's camp. How do you feel like you've shown differences between yourself and Huell's camp, not necessarily just being on the Ag Committee, which is, of course, substantial, but as far as your vote, how do you feel like you've showed the difference there that obviously people wanted, otherwise they would have stuck with them?
Well, I think, even though you kind of made the disclaimer, I think number one is I did get on the Ag Committee, and I think even I underestimated how important that is. And as we're working on trade agreements and working on nutrition issues, more and more I understand how important it was to be on that. I think when it comes to healthcare is another great example. I was able to work with the process to develop relationships with other people to keep pressing forward on formulating a plan. It's really easy just to say no, but instead I've tried to be a voice of solutions, offering solutions, and I think that my votes are consistent with solutions as well.
Do you feel like they're different votes than Tim Huell's camp would have made?
Gosh, you know, I just never have sat there and broke them down one by one and can't speak for how he would have voted on them. I just never have looked at it that way. I've always tried to vote what I thought was the right thing to do, never would really compare it to what someone else would have done.
That about covers some of the questions I had for you, unless there's anything you think I've missed or anything else that you want to definitely get out there.
I think we're good, Brady. Appreciate you taking the time.
You too. You too.
Have a great week. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.